This is Mae Brussel. It's side two of broadcast number 470. And in case you picked it up in the middle, I'm talking about the reasons that I believe the space shuttle was sabotaged, that it is a continuous process from the coup we had in Dallas in 1963, and that this is the intrusion now into the Air Force, the Pentagon, and the military to solidify their base in the space program and to push the NASA officials aside, use the bulk of the money for Star Wars and for those people that will be involved in warfare projects up in space. Now, the sixth reason that I think something suspicious is the infighting between William Graham, who's now the acting chairman of the NASA group, and James Beggs, B-E-G-G-S, the former director. Mr. Beggs was just charged several weeks ago with influence and improper billing or receiving extra money for contracts with General Dynamics. And they go back to 1981. That was 5 years ago that this problem was noticed. And 5 years later, they're prosecuting these people. He's been in a high position all this time. And Mr. Beggs is one of those that wanted and worked for space stations. Now, there are two conflicts going on at the present time. One, whether to have space stations for people for just industrial and private use. And the other is the space stations for national security for the warfare state. I'll give homework to some world watcher who wants to call Washington or help me out and find out if William Graham is any way related to Daniel Graham, the head of High Frontier, the partner of Fritz Kramer in Germany, the man pushing the Star Wars Defense Initiative, the wheels behind this action, the head lobbyist in Washington, D.C., the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Star Wars Defense and the Defense Intelligence Agency combined together in Daniel Graham. And it would be interesting to know if William Graham, who is replacing James Beggs, is any relation to the other one. Mr. Beggs and Mr. Graham don't speak to each other. Mr. Beggs took a 2 month leave. He was hired in 1981. He worked for General Dynamics up to that time, then went to the space stations and space program to NASA. And now the changes in NASA involve a Mr. Jesse Moore, who just stepped in this week. He's only been there 4 days before the shuttle went down. So there's been a change in the major shift. The heads are all new at the time that this Challenger was going up. This defective shuttle ship was going up, and with warnings about it going up, and they've moved out the person who was in charge. They've indicted the other one who just stepped aside. There's infighting where they don't talk to each other. So there's a shift of personnel, and a lot of the excuses for not answering many of the questions is, we're too new here. They just happened to bring in a new team. And is this team the Warfare Star Wars team to work NASA in conjunction with the Defense Star Wars, moving a lot of their activity now to Vandenberg Air Base in California, not far too far from Carmel, where a $2.8 billion base where they'll fly around the poles and begin their intensive work against the Soviet Union. The eighth reason I'm suspicious of this event was that Richard Perle, a man who works in the State Department, one of the greatest manipulators for, say, World War III, the Star Wars defense, one of the most violent anti-Russians who speaks to him about himself as being a Rasputin. He's an instigator, a manipulator. He had a quotation in the newspaper, interestingly enough, just last week in the White House, and they were talking about the Ronald Reagan's insecurities or decisions and how he makes decisions. And this is a story from the San Jose Mercury, January 28th. Administration is at war with itself, officials say. And it has to do with the simmering George Shultz, Caspar Weinberger battle, their relationships to the Soviet Union, whether they're going to go along and have disarmament or try to get rid of the atomic bombs, and the warfare going on in the White House. And then the story goes on, Mr. Perle, Assistant Defense Secretary Richard Perle, added with a grin, there's been a lot of infighting. One reason is that the president doesn't give strong direction. He lets every issue ventilate until it bubbles up and forces a decision. Then Perle added with a grin, on the other hand, there hasn't been a disaster. So maybe Reagan's system works. Now, that is Tuesday, January 28th, and somebody had to order that ship to go up in that freezing temperature with all the problems of the ice, and I think, and said last week, I think this will be Reagan's disaster, and it comes from a man who could cause it if there were a continuation of the military takeover in this country, not appreciating Mr. Gorbachev coming here or Ronald Reagan trying to understand him, to do just as they did with the U-2 plane over the Soviet Union to embarrass the President of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower, who later began to talk about the military-industrial complex in no uncertain words. So Richard Pearl is quoted the very day it went down, saying Reagan has pushed his luck too far. I'm translating it. He hasn't yet had a disaster, and that morning was the disaster. Another point is that even if a bad challenger goes down, if they say we need another one or we'll rebuild another one or push your pennies, it isn't bad for business. Rockwell would get the contract. Theocole would get it. Lockheed would get it. It would cost $2.2 billion. It comes out of our defense budget, which is astronomical. It goes right out of the Air Force or whatever budget or out of the intelligence budget, which is unlimited. So with it, for several years, it's economically good to build a new one. You have a bad one, and the sympathy for the people who went down this broad spectrum, as I say, that rainbow group that went down, the sympathy is with them, this tremendous buildup. So it's a good way to get the American buckaroos to buy a new ship, keep these people employed. They bought their homes, so they want to keep the payments going. Warfare is business, so what if it went down? Let it go down, take the transfer from the civilian to the military, and build, give us the money to build a new ship. Another point is that William Graham, who's now head of NASA, knowing that the weather was bad for 3 days, came out on Tuesday by visiting members of Congress. He wasn't watching the space shuttle take off. He's the new head of NASA, and he was in the offices of a congressman visiting the day it went off. He learned it from him, and he's, you know, campaigning, I guess, already for a new ship. And you would think with the weather hazards and the standoff, should we go or we shouldn't go, and Rockwell saying don't go in that morning, and they delay it 1 hour, and they delayed it another hour, you'd think that the head of NASA himself would be watching this, but according to accounts, he was in the office of a congressman visiting with him at the time the shuttle took off. Another point is that they could be testing, as I said before, the laser, the Star Wars weapons, because the rocket booster was shot down, and they lied about that, and they could be testing on the ground right away when the seals didn't hold and the cold weather caused the ship to malfunction. Were they testing these laser weapons? The Soviet Union objected to the test at Vandenberg Air Force Base, but this way you could hide part of your Star Wars of breaking up the rocket boosters with lasers and cause them to fall off, and then you could blame the cold weather later on the leak, or you don't have to use the weather. You just say there was a leak and you know it. If those documents were there in July, that they knew there was problems, then test your laser and use it as an ordinary flight, just as Vandenberg had a controversy testing that laser this summer, just at the time of the meeting, or this winter, with Gorbachev and President Reagan. Another point is, immediately after the rocket boosters were destroyed, there was a silence for 24 hours, and then NASA said, we did it to save the population. It was going to come back to the population. Then another day passes, and they admitted that they were lying. This was in Time magazine. They said it wouldn't come back to the land. I'm not a scientist and never built a spaceship, but I know they don't fly, and it would have fallen in the water. I knew it was a lie. Then they began to cry one day later, we've lost some of our best evidence. Well, they blew it up, and then quickly they went to get all the parts that nobody could see them or get the parts, just as they're getting the cameras from the ordinary photographers who have less information than the rocket boosters. And they scramble around for those parts, and then it turns out that the Air Force was the one who pressed the button and blew up the boosters, and I'll talk about that again in a minute. So there were these lies, one following the other, first silence, and then lies. The 13th reason that I think is a conspiracy is the matter of impounding the photographs that I mentioned regarding control of the news media. They said, we know it's illegal, but we're going to keep the film. Is this a police state? I don't have to ask that question. It's been a police state since 1963. But as I say, they're licking up all their wounds, not their wounds, but their setbacks. And now they're getting smart like Grenada. They won't let you see if they bomb up a hospital where there could be testing or even for AIDS or medical experiments down in Grenada. And we'll do more on that later. But they impounded the pictures knowing it was illegal. What was necessary for them to take the film away from those people so soon? Another reason I think something is weird about this is that President Reagan watched the TV from direct lines from the White House. He could have watched from the TV instead of using his direct lines, pardon me, from the White House. He sat in front of the camera, according to the Washington Post and other stories, and watched like we did and got his information from the news people, just as we get information from the news people. Well, at the time he was shot, the news people said Mr. James Brady was dead, so then the White House thought Brady was dead. But they have direct lines. They don't have to depend on disinformation or wrong information. But I believe that they watch it so that they see what the people are told and can tape what the people are told. And if there's too much discussion of the weather, which there was, if there are too many pictures of the icicle, which there were, and luckily I have those, they haven't taken ours away with the videotapes, then they can counteract the thing that they don't want told quickly by watching what the public hears, not calling directly and finding out for themselves. So another point is that Reagan didn't understand what happened when he was told that this shuttle went down. And many of you saw this quotation in the papers where Mr. Buchanan came in and told him the space shuttle had exploded. And Reagan said, is that the one with the teacher? Well, since 1984, he had talked about the teacher. They had sent, as I say, these 800 newspaper people there. The newspaper was filled with nothing but the teacher. So why would the President of the United States ask if it was the one with the teacher? Was there any other shuttle going off that day? And he's going to talk about the teacher in his speech that evening, the State of the Union. And he'd been planning the speech for, I read, since last summer, if you can believe that. But how is it that Reagan, President of the United States, that day is confused? Was he drugged? Does he get pain pills for the part of his colon that was taken out? Is he sedated at times? How much do we know about the mind of a man who says to Mr. Buchanan, was that the one with the teacher? So would he make decisions? He can't make decisions to fly in the cold, but somebody behind his back, like John Kennedy said, there's a hidden government behind my back. Alan Dulles and John J. McCloy and that gang, somebody, as I say, Air Force or Pentagon beyond Reagan, knowing he would use Christ in the speech and so forth, but he didn't seem to understand, and the Washington Post had a story, and San Jose Mercury, that the president didn't seem to understand what happened and kept on talking about the speech tonight as if it didn't happen, and this is a direct quotation. He didn't seem to understand what had happened. And I think that's very interesting because actually he isn't that stupid, and they had trouble getting into his head the story of what was taking place, and everyone else in the country could pick it up instantly. Another point, number 16, is that NASA knew for 3 days what happened the first day, and they didn't make any effort to explain. Their news article saying that they understood exactly how it happened, that they're ready to go launch again, that they can take off because the location of the problem has been solved. This was in the San Jose Mercury this last Saturday. The Air Force is pressing it with preparations for the next shuttle, now scheduled for mid-July after receiving informal advice from NASA officials of the cause that of the Challenger explosion has been located. Now, the committee's going on and has 120 days to find out what happened, and NASA says we're ready to launch now because we understand what happened. If you don't think that's a little weird, please explain it to me. They knew within 3 days, another news article said, what happened from the first day, but they didn't make any effort to explain for a few days. Another point is that NASA was supposed to tell the nation within 20 minutes when lives are lost, when there's damage lost. And this is a provision that was put into NASA a few years ago, that they were to tell the American public within a very short time. This was written into their laws, actually, or the rules of NASA, that they were to inform the public right away within 20 minutes because people would hear it on the radio or they would see it on TV. And yet NASA waited 5 hours and then was evasive about the questions and wouldn't answer them. And the question is, what was the reason for breaking the regulations that within 20 minutes they would announce the facts to people, and many of them already knew them? Another point is that the Air Force was the organization that decided or quickly blew up the rocket boosters. Newsweek, February the 10th, tells you that the Air Force blew up the rocket boosters. And again, that's the piece of machinery that is so controversial that relates to the seals and the frozen weather and the fuel in the rocket boosters. And the Air Force, the military decision came from the Air Force to blow the rocket boosters. The rocket boosters are important for the evidence to solve this thing, and they lied about having destroyed it themselves. They were the ones that destroyed it, and they lied about the population. Another suspicious thing is the commission that Ronald Reagan appointed. First, NASA was going to investigate it. They're still doing some work. Congress was to investigate it. And this is similar to a body of legal people in the state of Texas that were to investigate the murder of John Kennedy. Then President Lyndon Johnson, who inherited his throne, appointed his commission to investigate it. Now, William Rogers, appointed by the President of the United States to investigate the committee, is a member of Kissinger Associates. Kissinger, of course, is the godson or the person who owes his career to his mentor, Fritz Kramer. Fritz Kramer shares the offices with the head of SDI of Star Wars of High Frontier, Daniel Graham. Rogers is a member of Kissinger Associates, and Kissinger and his gang are very close to Star Wars and Air Force, where the people blowing up the rocket boosters. First hearing about this event of the explosion, NASA claimed they were ill-prepared to go on television to see the public to answer questions. And now they'll be off the air, and then they will cover up what they want and let a little leak, and it will appear to be a full investigation. Another thing I'm suspicious of, also I want to go in, William Rogers, a World Watcher listener, sent me a letter right away and reminded me and called me. If you have the Sundance article by Jeff Gerth, and I'll detail it for those of you who don't have it, he goes into detail of the role of William Rogers of organized crime with Richard Nixon and B.B. Rebozza, and Resorts International and their Bahamas and international connections. He was also the attorney for the Shah of Iran, formerly our attorney general, and worked under Eisenhower and Nixon. Earl Warren, who headed the Warren Commission, was a old link to the mobsters, to Murray Chotiner, to the crime syndicate in California and New York with Tom Dewey and Lucky Luciano gang. So they have a man closely related to the crime syndicate with no knowledge space shuttles or spaceships, but a familiarity with how to cover up events similar to this in other occasions. William Rogers heads the committee. The commission appointed him. He's the head appointed by Ronald Reagan. Another reason I'm suspicious of is that what held up the shuttle the second hour, the first hour is when Rockwell came out and said, don't go. We're talking about Tuesday, and I mentioned last week how I woke up and heard it had been delayed. 1 hour because of the ice, and the ice never dropped or changed. But what held up the shuttle the second hour, according to the Washington Post, January 29th, was detection that an electronic fire detection system on the launch pad, heating a faulty computer card, began spewing inaccurate readings. It is supposed to ensure that the fire suppression system is functioning on the launch pad. It was repaired 1 hour before launch on Tuesday. It was not detected for 5 days, or they didn't describe it for 5 days. Why not? So, one, the ice held them up 1 hour. Two, a warning on fire held them up the second hour. Three, they went off when the ice was the same. I wonder if the warning system of the fire was really repaired that second hour. So they went out with the ice, the same condition as it was when they weren't supposed to go, and worked on a fire warning system for an hour, then launched. Another point is that point brought out in Newsweek that accidental damage took place. Many of you know this. The derrick on launch pad 39B, The tower struck one of the attached points between the Challenger and the external fuel tank. NASA Chief Jesse Moore dismissed it as a minor scrape. Then later, he admitted that he didn't bother to attempt to X-ray the underlying metal for structural damage. Again, this is number 21 in the reasons I believe the ship was sabotaged and never meant to fly by the military defense, the Air Force blowing up the booster rockets, knowing the seals were bad, and taking space literally into the hands of the military from now on. Another reason I believe it was sabotage, point 22, is the change of responsibility for the orders to launch. The Wall Street Journal, February the 4th, 1986, said the first few days, Jesse Moore took responsibility along with a team of giving approval to launch. Wall Street Journal, that's my comment. The early days, starting the minute the ship went down, actually January the 28th, Jesse Moore took credit or took the blame, not the credit, the blame for the launch. He said, I gave them the go-ahead along with a group of teams that helped make the thing. I gave them the go-ahead, and Moore had just been there 4 days with the NASA in this capacity when he gave the go-ahead. But in Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, rather, February the 4th, it says Rockwell International urged NASA against proceeding. But quoting Jesse Moore on February the 4th, he said, but others involved in the decision basically recommended that, you know, we launch. He's the shuttle program director. Sunday, he said, before the launch, and remember the quote I had last week, I will not be pressured because of the schedule. That's the Defense Department schedule to get the Star Wars operations going. I will not be pressured because of the schedule, which, as I say, is a military operation. If he wouldn't be pressured because of the schedule, then why, this is on Sunday, then why on Tuesday did he say that others involved in the proceedings, in the decision, recommended we go? Another point is that Judson A. Lovingood, the man that I quoted before, the deputy manager of shuttle projects in Huntsville, Alabama, the network of Wernher von Braun and Mr. Rudolph and the top Nazis that came over from Germany for Star Wars, for space stations, for the attack of World War III. Mr. Lovingood from Huntsville, Alabama, was told by Theocol, who makes the boosters, in quotes, that cold temperature is okay. It will not be affected by the fuel. And Rockwell, who made the shuttle, called to say that cold weather was a danger. Don't go. If cold weather causes or delays in other ships before, if there's other reasons to fear the ice or icicles other than fuel, and this is the seals, then why were they cautious before and not cautious on the 28th? The Huntsville characters, the Star Wars characters, the Project Paperclip Nest, did they have more to say than Rockwell? Of course they did. San Jose Mercury, February 7th, 1986, said that Theocol, who makes the boosters from Huntsville, where they were quoted, cold is okay, won't affect the fuel. Rockwell calls and says, it's a danger, don't go. And they went, and they knew that they couldn't fly in this or take off in this kind of weather. Another reason that I believe this is suspicious is that NASA failed to communicate the disaster. William Safire, January 30th, 1986, has a syndicated column that the NASA Public Affairs Division contingency plan, and this is the one I was naming before, dated March the 30th, 1984, reads, in the event of an emergency involving crew injury or fatality, the fact will be apparent to radio listeners and TV viewers. Status of the crew will be the prime public consideration. The facts, once confirmed, should be announced as promptly as possible. No longer than 20 minutes should lapse before an announcement is made. That was put into their rules at NASA, March 30th, 1984. The other point I said was that NASA waited 5 hours to have a press conference, and this is the fact that it was specified that they should go out and tell you. So why did they take so long? NASA was busy, according to William Safire, for 5 hours, dealing with inexperienced boss, But the man in charge should be there. NASA was not ready for the public side of their contingency. Another point about the Air Force, number 25, is from the San Jose Mercury, February the 8th. They were ready to go again with the Discovery a while back when they received advice from NASA on the cause of the explosion. 2 weeks later, the Air Force blew up a rocket booster, as I say, then lied about that. They said, it's not as serious as we thought. We have incorporated deficiencies, and we will be using the new solid fuel boosters. They were ready to go with the new kind of fuel anyway. The Air Force and the SDI were going to Vandenberg, and they would be using a new fuel in the Discovery. So the Challenger was outdated anyway. The Challenger was going with possibly frozen fuel in the lowest temperature they've ever taken off. And the quotation of the people involved with Vandenberg and so forth said that they've corrected the deficiencies that the Challenger went out with. We won't be using that fuel. We have two new solid rocket boosters with wound filament around them rather than steel. It'll save them 4,600 pounds. The launch will take place in California. It will carry Teal Ruby. That will be the satellite to fly over the poles and over the Soviet Union. And they even went so far as to say, we shouldn't rebuild the new shuttle. So they knew it was bad. They're ready with the new one, and they have a different kind of fuel. So they could, again, test their laser, put the rocket booster Deep Six, and test their laser because they already have something else to come up with. Now, another reason I'm suspicious is that besides gathering the film of the explosion, they know they're breaking the law. There has to be a military operation involved in this. Now, Judith Resnick, who went down with this shuttle, the Challenger, was doing experiments on AIDS, and I'll do more about that with you next week. And next week, I'm going to talk about the Challenger and its relation to the KAL, and also do more, of course, on advanced genetic sciences. I don't want to leave that behind. But NASA seized this film, and they wouldn't have to do this unless it were a military operation. The military are saying, don't worry, we have new fuel now, that's okay. They're saying, don't worry, you don't have to build another shuttle. And they're saying, don't worry if we break a law and it's illegal to take your film, because they might have tested blowing up that booster by remote control the way they did the other satellite. They have the technology. There's pictures of the icicles there, and the taking of the news cameras away and the films, as I read you the article, is dangerous. Impounding it is dangerous. It's illegal. It's a bad precedent, and hopefully the news media, after being knocked down after Grenada and coming back like pussycats, maybe they'll understand what is really happening here. Now, another point I'm suspicious about is the shuttle contingency plan. Dr. Hans Mark, with a long history of working with the former Nazis, I can't remember, I'll have to look up his biography of if he came from here, Germany, to this country from Paperclip, I believe. He did. I have to check out his background. Dr. Hans Mark was deputy administrator for NASA. He was former secretary of the Air Force. And the Air Force, as I say, are the ones saying, we have the other fuel, don't build another ship, we blew up the boosters. He said all vital military payloads would be clearly flown because military missions had priority. He said that even though the contingency plan is that if one shuttle goes down and we lose one or two, the military gets the priority. The Air Force and the military have to take over from NASA priorities into their hands. The shuttle explosion, I believe, provided the excuse to destroy booster rockets that concealed what happened, the role of the ice, which they totally have ruled out. And then finally, there's a long article in the Chicago Tribune and the San Francisco Examiner, rather, February the 5th. The solid fuel temperature was not checked by NASA. NASA officials admitted that the temperature inside the booster rockets was not checked before the launch. They never considered monitoring the cold fuel package. This is Jim Mizell from NASA. I don't remember any discussion about temperature of the solids. Solid fuel deteriorates in some sub-freezing weather. The flames can get as hot as 6,000 and reach and burn through the booster casings. A burn-through is believed to be the cause of the explosion. NASA has refused to release record of temperature at launch site the hours before launch, but they've impounded the information, but the Weather Service said it was 23 degrees in the early morning hours, and after the explosion it was 28 degrees. You see how childish they are. The weather is public knowledge to everybody. They say we have impounded what the weather was that day. I don't have time to finish this article that was in the Chicago Tribune and the Examiner out here, but I think you get the idea from this broadcast and from what I said last week that I believe that the Challenger was sabotaged. It had to come from the Pentagon, the Star Wars people. The ship was useless. It was broken down anyway in many areas. They sacrificed a lot, and what they gained was now the military control of space, the solidification of the military taking over the space shuttle, and that's what I think this was all about. This is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week to talk about some more of these very important events.